John 1 verse 5 says, the light shines in the darkness and the darkness has not overcome it. That is our anchor point today. Welcome to the Insight Out Show. I'm Devin. I shared this verse last Thursday, the day after Charlie Kirk was assassinated, but it still feels right where we are today. And honestly, I'm not back to my normal rhythm yet. I just don't know how some people can jump back in and collect their thoughts so quickly after tragedy. That is not me. It takes me a long time to process. And so here we are. It's not quite the normal show, but a space again to reflect. Part of that reflection is looking at what is happening in our country right now. Because if John reminds us that the light shines in the darkness, we also have to be honest about that darkness that we are up against. I think we overlook that sometimes. And one of the biggest places that we are seeing that darkness unfold is through social media. Outrage is the business model of social media, among other things. Rage pays. So the angrier the post, the harsher the clip, the more extreme the video, the more money somebody makes. Here's CBS Mornings talking about this.
Have you ever seen something on social media that got you so up and mad, fired up, that you went right to the comment section to give people a piece of your mind? Well, maybe you regretted it afterwards. A lot of people do. You might have fallen for a pretty straightforward tactic called rage bait. It's a strategy by some influencers who purposefully make you mad to get your attention and get you engaging with their content. Can you believe this? It also is used to spread misinformation, to confuse, to disorientate, all the rest. And whether you like it or not, creators profit off your anger. Your anger is the product.
It was back in 2017. Facebook, they gave 5 times more weight to the angry emoji, you know, the red emoji that looks super mad. 5 times more weight to that emoji than to a simple like. That means that the angriest, maddest content went to the top of your feed. And so that leaves us feeling awful and like the world is falling apart. And then it gets us a little enraged. They call this rage bait, rage posting, outrage posting. How does this work? I think the easiest way, at least one of the ways to look at this, because there are kind of different forms of this, but if you have a favorite sports team, which you probably do, okay, I am a Ravens fan. That is my team. So you are in your in-group with other Ravens fans. The out-group, that would be my husband's team. He's with the Jets. And you know what gets the biggest reaction in the stands? Not cheering for your own team. It is booing and bashing the other side. So that would be me being a Ravens fan, just taking all the time and we are just bashing and coming down on the Jets. That's what's getting all the attention. All of that spreads faster than anything else. Yale had a study on this too. The more likes and shares people got for expressing outrage, the more these posts would grow. It would help people gain followers and traction, and the more likely they were to keep doing it. That outrage spreads because it's just getting rewarded. Facebook has since changed how this whole process works. They changed all that with the emoji thing. They changed how the algorithm works. A lot of it now is driven by AI, so they've got different formulas for that. This is really all of these platforms. There's so much behind the scenes. Are we really ever going to know? But what we do know is that it does seem to be waging war and pitting us all against each other.
I think social does obviously present the ability to engage more, but it also presents an opportunity for people to engage in a much more aggressive way. There is a move within social media to really dehumanize the person behind what they're saying.
I don't think it's a coincidence. And why bring this up? Well, it makes me think of Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk has had incredible reach on social media, thanks to X, especially when Elon Musk bought it back in 2022. It's become a place where people can post more freely. And in some ways, I think that shift has pushed other platforms to loosen up a little bit too. Charlie Kirk has some 9 million followers, even more now after his death. And out of that, we're actually seeing the younger generation turn toward faith. And for some, it's the very first time they've ever encountered Christ, and it's happening through social media, through people like Charlie Kirk and many others. According to YouGov, YouGov is a public analytics company, belief in God among 18 to 24-year-olds jumped from 16%, that was back in 2021, to 45% in January 2025. That's huge. Like, what is happening here? And alongside that, church attendance is climbing. To me, that looks like God working even in these messy, noisy platforms, creating new spaces where people can hear the gospel for the first time, maybe even discover that God is real for the first time. That is awesome. But darkness likes to find these places. And here's part of the problem. Let's talk about Charlie Kirk in this case. When we share this kind of content, it doesn't just reach fans or the curious. It also feeds the outrage machine for people who already dislike him or don't like what he has to say. And so we've seen it. These small clips get pulled out of context. They get twisted into something he never said. They're reposted again and again and again until the whole thing snowballs. And then it's lie on top of lie on top of lie. Before long, Charlie Kirk is not even Charlie Kirk anymore. He's turned into this cartoon character villain that doesn't even exist. He's a fictional character that has been created and pieced together by so-called reputable news outlets and others on social media, just churning this stuff out. We probably heard some of the things that he's been called. He's been called a Nazi. Even Stephen King, the author, once claimed that Kirk had advocated stoning gays to death. He had an ex post about that, which is not only horrible, but completely untrue. I will say that Stephen King has since apologized, but it was already out there. And I guess here's the scary part. We have a lot of unstable people that don't see the nuance here. I mean, even stable people are guilty of this, right? We read something, we don't even know if it's true, and we share it anyway. But when it comes to unstable people, they might see this post, not care whether it's real or not, or maybe they do, and they're taking that fictional version as fact. And then all it takes is hearing that one opinion that they don't agree with, and then suddenly that post is enough to justify hate or violence. And because we've lost sight of what justice really is, that's another issue on the table, then we're watching more unstable people take matters into their own hands. It's the perfect storm of just pure awfulness. There's no room for honest debate. We have these echo chambers, these silos of just sameness. Everybody's got to be the same. And if we can't agree to see things the same, then the message is, well, then you can't exist. That's where we're headed. That's what we are seeing. I want to share this with you. This is from a TPUSA event. This is a woman sharing. Her name is Erica. This is not his wife, sharing when she met Charlie Kirk. Here's her story.
Is that Erica again?
It is Erica again. Hi, Charlie. So since meeting you,
made friends earlier. She was homeless a year ago, and now she's thriving. How great is that? Isn't it?
Since meeting you a few short hours ago, I've already had numerous people remove me on Instagram and tell me they can no longer be my friends because I'm here at a free event learning both sides of the spectrum. Anyway, live and let live. Everybody can live however they want. They can do whatever they want. And my question for you is, do you have any hate? And is Turning Point USA against the LGBT community? Because I'm being told that by coming here and listening to you speak that I'm either a racist or a fascist or against the LGBT. And isn't fascism when someone doesn't agree with your beliefs and your views and they want it either your way or the highway?
Yeah, the people that defriended you on Instagram, they're the fascists. So I do not have hate for a group. I do not have hate for a people. I
so
hate
just
for
so I can get it on my camera. So Instagram.
Don't worry,
Hi.
We got plenty of cameras. But yeah.
But yes. So you do not hate the LGBT community, well, no, and Turning Point is not against LGBT.
No, how could I hate that which I have a heart for?
Thank you.
And I might not agree at that for some of the lifestyle choices that some people make, but of course not.
That's exactly how this whole rage machine just churns and functions. It just feeds off this stuff. And I hate this part, but we also have to follow the money because this explains a lot. The outrage over social media clips and posts that we see They're horrible. They're evil. They're violent. They're all these things, and they're loud and obnoxious. But it's also quite lucrative. If I post something outrageous, something that might be shocking or divisive, it's going to draw clicks and comments and shares. That's how it works. So just for an example, okay, here's like a simple one. Let's say my daughter comes home from school and she tells me her teacher didn't let her share something during class. Now, I don't tell you that the reason she couldn't share her thoughts was because they ran out of time, but I go on social media and I post, schools are completely out of control. My daughter's teacher refused to let her share her opinion today while the rest of the class got to share. That will spark outrage. That will start to make people wonder why. Oh, well, it must be political. Oh, these stupid teachers, they can't manage their class. Oh, this is clear favoritism on display. Those are the comments that are going to start to churn and come in. And as this happens, more engagement means more ad dollars for me and the platforms, and maybe a brand sponsorship, maybe merch sales or a book deal and all this other stuff. And everybody's making money. For some people, outrage is literally paying their bills. And the more we fall into that trap, the more we scroll, the more ads that they show, the more data they collect on us, then they sell that back to the advertisers. And it's just this whole cycle, this big loop of outrage, setting off reactions, boosts the algorithm. The algorithm spreads it further and everybody profits, except who? Oh, that would be us. We are the product. And then we're just left more angry and exhausted. Now, what in the world do we do about it? Some people say, okay, well, with everything that we're seeing, the answer is to stop hate speech. For them, that means silencing voices like Charlie Kirk because he believes men are men and women are women. And their logic is, if he can't speak, then he won't be a target. Other people say, no. The problem is guns and Charlie liked guns. So there, if he wanted to live, he should be against guns. Here's the reality. Whether Tyler Robinson, the suspect, legally owned that gun or not, we still can't go around killing people. Like, that's already against the law. And people who are bent on killing, they're not exactly thinking about obeying the laws in the first place, I would think. And then there's like another third wheel to this. There's the group that says, no, the issue is not hate speech. It's not gun laws. The issue is just, we've got to get the violent content off social media, ban it, and tragedies like this won't spread. And listen, I get that. I do think there is a gray area here. I mean, I wish I never, ever, ever saw the video of Charlie Kirk's death. It popped up in my feed completely without warning, and it was awful. I will never get that image out of my head. Our bodies and our soul are not meant to be exposed to that. I also don't think pornography should be shoved in our faces at every turn. But I think the bigger issue is that the more we click, the more we share, the more the platforms feed us content that is louder, it's darker, it's more shocking. Why? Well, because the outrage and vulgarity pay. And we could say, well, that's the root of the problem. We got to take care of that. But that's actually not quite it. It's not the speech. It's not the platforms. It is our hearts. It all goes back to this, our sinful, broken hearts. The vulgar, twisted, disgusting part of ourselves and our humanity that we don't want to face about ourselves, that we are so sick, so, so sick, desperately sick and suffering without Christ. And if we're not careful, we're just talking about this in my Bible study the other day, that the things in our feeds, wherever our attention is, the things that we are looking at, the things that we are hearing, that is what will disciple us more than the Word of God. And then we just start to become products of that entire system, products of these silos, these echo chambers that we're choosing to spend our time in. So that's what I think the problem is. And as a result of the problem and us not seeing what the problem is, this outrage is taking us to some very interesting places. I think we're watching two very dangerous paths emerge from this. Vigilantism and nihilism. Okay, so let me explain these. Vigilantism says, this whole system's broken, so I've got to take matters into my own hand. I'm going to fix this thing myself. We're convinced that we're like the hero of the story, or we got to figure this out for the sake of humanity even. acting out our own version of truth that is really fueled by just moral outrage, self-righteousness, that, ta-da, I got to be the one to save the day, no matter what it takes. And that kind of thinking can spill over into all of that real world violence that we see. That was like with the case Luigi Mangione, who took the life of the UnitedHealthcare CEO. I mean, it appears his intention was to bring back like a moral ground, to bring back rightness. And what a very interesting way to achieve that. The other path is nihilism. And this is very scary as well. This is when nothing matters. It is complete, total despair. It's the, I don't care, nothing matters, I'm just going to burn everything down, like total destruction. Because if everything's meaningless and nothing has value, then that total emptiness can lead to all that destruction.
Nihilism is becoming dangerously popular and is no longer just in philosophy classrooms or those weird subreddits. It's in the way millions of real people are talking about life itself.
We are the generation that is waking up to the myth of the American dream. I think Gen Z is dubbed the nihilist generation because they feel that they have wasted their time and their money pursuing a degree that we were told to pursue, and it's amounting to nothing.
We're all gonna die. None of this matters.
Everywhere you look, it seems like people have completely given up and are now questioning if there's any reason to get up in the morning. And beyond that, they're questioning existence and life itself.
People start living out their vigilantism and nihilism, often by what they're consuming online. So often these fictional stories. I mean, maybe there's a sliver of truth in what they are seeing and hearing and reading online, but they're only seeing one side because so many of these viral stories are part fiction, part truth, part sensationalism, part outrage, all together by media outlets and ordinary people chasing clicks and influence and money looking for profit. Gen Z are those that are born from the late 1990s up to about 2010, and they have been through a lot, right? All the changing technology that changes every day, overnight. So concerned about the climate, political unrest, the fallout of COVID, just a lot of stuff. And that can really feed that nihilistic outlook. Gen Z is now one of the most unchurched generations of our time. Listen.
It turns out the youngest Americans are the least likely churchgoers we have ever seen. Check out this chart right here. It shows how nearly half of Gen Z, people born after 1996, has no religious affiliation whatsoever.
I get it. It's like the life's been drained out of them and they've gone into the deeper tunnels of social media and AI, and then they're lonely and isolated and just this steady diet of things that feel like no meaning, no purpose, no worth. I can't imagine feeling that way. I can't imagine not having Christ in my life to deal with what they've gone through and what we're all going through in this world. Now, there is some good news. Even though Gen Z is one of the most unchurched generations of our time, that tide does seem to be turning drastically. Like it is a big turn, almost like a U-turn. They're finding their way back into the church. There is so much data coming out on that. So that's so cool to see. And we are witnessing that in our own church. I mean, I've seen the number of young people coming through our doors. It is wild to see. It's awesome. So we have a lot going on. We've got young people returning to the church, returning to faith. And then we've got those extremes, vigilantism and nihilism, also on the rise. In Charlie Kirk's case, we saw both play out. People stepping into that role of being the judge, taking matters into their own hands, wanting him silenced, which is how we get people like Luigi Mangione, who took the life of the UnitedHealthcare CEO, and suspect Tyler Robinson, taking the life of Charlie Kirk, stepping in to take justice into their own hands. And then we saw what happened online, on social, so many people celebrating his death for both of these cases, as if life doesn't matter at all, like at all. And the number of people celebrating, including teachers and doctors and people in our government, is just shocking to me. I don't know how to process that. Trying to figure out why, like, how does that make sense? Obviously, they don't have Christ. That without Christ, it feels heroic, like they're on the right side of history here, or it creates a distorted sense of belonging. Like, at least they can, since there is no purpose in life to so many of these people, that attaching to some type of purpose, even though it's meaningless, at least gives them some sense of comfort, because to not have any purpose is just soul crushing. To have no clue of why you exist. Or it's just that, because it's so unbearable to deal with that you just act out because nothing matters, which is all equally disturbing. And that's why this whole conversation matters. Because while the world says outrage is profitable, that's the direction we're going to go, this is the thing we're going to keep feeding ourselves, God's word tells us something very different. James writes in chapter 1, verses 19 through 20, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires." So in other words, if we want our lives to reflect the character of Christ, we can't react in anger or jump into these arguments. I like Proverbs 18:21 as well. It says, "The tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit." What we say, or even what we post online, has the power to either life or destruction, to tear people down. And when we respect the power of the tongue, we will enjoy the fruit of words that build up and encourage and don't destroy. I get caught up into it. You know, they call it the doom scrolling. I mean, it's made to be addicting. So we're all suffering from some version of this. We're clicking on posts that make us angry. And even though we know better, we feel like we just got to add to the conversation. It is addictive, and that is all by design. These platforms are meant to stir our emotions, to keep us scrolling, to make us mad, to keep us hooked. But the good news is that we do not have to play along. Algorithms aren't going anywhere. And so when it feels like we can't win against this outrage and the depravity and the algorithms and the violence and the evil that is attempting to hijack our souls, the darkness still cannot and will not win. This is just one of thousands of stories happening across the world.
Hi, my name is Haley, and Charlie Kirk's death led me to give my life fully to Jesus Christ. I don't know about anybody else, but Charlie's death really ignited a spiritual flame inside of me that I have never, never in my life experienced before. It's like a spiritual switch flipped on for me, and I don't know how to explain it. His death really changed my perspective about a lot.
God works for the good of those who love him. Quite symbolic. I think this was Charlie Kirk's favorite Bible verse, Romans 8:28. Maybe I'll start putting together a list of voices worth following, people of peace, encouragers, Christ followers who lift us up instead of tear us down. Because if we are going to have a feed, a social feed, let's make sure that we fill that with truth and hope. And better yet, maybe we spend less time looking down on our phones and more time looking up to Christ. That's it for today. Thank you for listening. Remember to choose wisely, and let's live our lives inside out.